You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This week on Heritage Radio Network's Meet and Three, we're spilling secrets.
Do you know what is in that makes it banned?
I do not, other than it being a proprietary blend of something that's supposed to be performance enhancing.
If you go through the drive-through in reverse, so your car is fully backwards, you get a free chocolate shake.
Tune in to Meet and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Help the people who help Oaxaca. Since 2009, Seconda has been supporting Oaxaca's underserved communities. Almost 5,000 people annually see their lives improved by this Mexican NGO. They've built and stocked 6 green libraries and 4 rain harvest hygiene stations, benefiting around 800 children and youth. And they've provided training and business coaching for over 120 female entrepreneurs. And much of that work has been done with the recycler communities that have grown around the garbage dump sites in Zaachila. All of that really is just the tip of an ever-growing iceberg. They've also supported legislation and implemented localized trainings designed to prevent sexual violence against girls and youth, eliminate child labor, forced labor, and violations of labor rights in Mexico's sugarcane and coffee sectors, and address the causes of gender inequality. And their small staff has done all of this without ever having offices of their own. For the past 13 years, Seconda has been hosted within the premises of a local bakery, a very kind gift from a very good corporation. But Seconda now needs their own home. They've acquired a plot of land and found an architectural firm, Sands Pond Arquitectura, willing to donate their time to develop plans. Now we need to raise the money to make those plans a reality. The cost of these new offices is around $100,000 US. They've received a matching grant from 818 Tequila that will cover half of that if we can raise the other $50,000. Seconda has done so much to help so many. We're asking you now to help Seconda. Help them build offices that will enable them to continue their existing work and to expand their programs that make Mexico more just and equitable. Make your fully tax-deductible contributions for Seconda at buildoaxaca.com. That's buildoaxaca.com. And thanks. I'm Lou Bank.
I am Cha Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about something that I love academic papers, and I was going through a paper about linguistics and the origin of words in Mexico.
I'm sorry, hang on a second. Let me go grab some coffee. I'm going to, like, just that sentence alone is putting me to sleep.
I know. It's gonna end really quick. We're going to get to more entertaining area quickly. And in one of the things that I found, there was this amazing extract of a letter that Hernán Cortés wrote to the King Carlos V.
Hernán Cortés, is that one of your cousins?
Maybe.
Fair.
Maybe. Well, not a direct cousin, but you know, I have a long lineage, a big family. And this was written on the 30th of October of 1520. And it says this. Here it goes, Lou.
Is it important to know this was the day before Halloween or not?
No, it's not. Okay, here it goes. Let's see what you catch. Let's see what makes some noise to you here.
Okay.
So he's describing a market and he says, "They sell bees, honey, and wax, and honey made with corn, which is as sweet and mellow as sugarcane sugar. Honey from a plant that is in the other islands they call maguey, that is so much better than grape syrup, and from these plants they make sugar and wine. They sell that too."
Are you telling me that there was corn syrup back in the 1500s? Am I hearing that right?
There was pulque syrup.
Yeah, but
there was agave syrup and corn syrup.
Well, the corn syrup shocks me more than the agave syrup.
What?
No, it really does. So the piece of that shocks me is agave syrup, to me, is sort of the natural byproduct. Like, it just happens. You don't even have to cook the agave to get the syrup
out. Well, you can.
You can, but my point is, like, you start making pulque, and we know they had been, right? Like, and you're just naturally going to end up with syrup, sap, coming out of the agave plant. But corn... Like, I thought you had to do all sorts of crazy, and I know this is not where you wanted to go, but this is literally what spoke to me, is I thought you had to do all sorts of crazy processing to get syrup out of corn.
Well, I have no idea how they do so-called natural corn syrup. I don't think I've ever tried that in Mexico.
Yeah,
they have a few candies. They have, like, some pastries that are sweet, like sweet corn pastries, but I always assumed they will add extra sugar to it.
Oh. I don't know. Anyway, that's the first thing that strikes me.
Okay.
What's the thing that strikes you? We know that you like the fact that there is basic. Is it agua miel or is it something different?
Well, that's. I mean, he doesn't go into absolute detail, but they were making. They didn't have sugar cane when the Spaniards arrived here, so a lot of their sweet things were coming via agave. So it might have been cooked agave, or it might be like cooked agave that then was reduced into sugars, or maybe just the agua miel that was cooked and made sugar from it. The other thing that really calls my attention is that Hernán Cortés is describing a market. And the narrative that we usually listen around pulque is that, oh, it was only for the royalty.
Ooh.
It was only for...
Oh,
exactly,
that's an interesting point.
So if this was such an exclusive product that was reserved for ceremonial purposes, what the hell is it being sold in the market? In the Zócalo of Mexico, was the most anti-royal, more like most common people's land.
Hang on a second. So let's step back. So I've certainly heard people say it was used in ceremonies, but I've never heard people saying, I've honestly never paid much attention, never saying that it was exclusive to ceremonies. Are you saying that this is something that you have read or?
Yeah, that's a very common narrative, that it was a very exclusive product. And that, I mean, there's even the Florentine Codex describes that drunkenness was sanctioned. But the way that I like to think about this is, you know, when I was in high school, if you were to read the manuals for conduct in my school, they were rather strict.
Oh,
where they were actually enforced, not quite so
right,
much.
Then you end up at Xochimilco with your...
Yeah, like, so I think every culture in the written papers, official papers, loves to have high standards of morality. And then how are they really enforced is doesn't quite match those a lot of times. So I think that's why we have access to those codexes.
Yeah.
So the other thing that really calls my attention is that when Hernán Cortés is talking about maguey, he says the word, he uses the word maguey, and he talks about a plant that he has seen in the other islands. And he's referring to the Caribbean. And the whole point about this article that I found is that the word maguey is not Mexican. It comes from the Caribbean. It was used to name aloes. And at the time, they were not, I mean, this is the theory. And at the time, the eyes of these explorers were not careful enough not to realize that aloe and maguey were not the same plant. And we've been talking about magueyes, thinking it's a Mexican word. Well, it's a Taino word. The Nahuatl word that this guy says was more common in this country was melchonte.
Well, so the piece of this that confuses me is the word that I always see popping up as the ancient word is metal, right? M-E-T-L.
Yeah, like, and that's like, that's why mezcal, it's cooked agave, it's...
Yeah. So what's the difference between that word and the funny word you just said?
Oh, no, actually, sorry, I misread my own note. So this was in the north of Mexico. In Sinaloa, the word was melchonte.
Which you can actually, like, you can see where metal would be.
Yeah, that was more in the center, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But he, like, this guy is talking about all this cultural exchange that happened via the conquerors that were collecting words from all these places they were visiting.
Huh.
So it turns out that even the way mezcal early on and a lot of the tools and elements that it was used to be produced, was already the mix of cultures.
Okay.
Are you following me?
I am. You know, it's my head is going in a place that I think you won't be interested in.
Okay. Well, like, still try it. Try my mind.
So this weekend at the event, Copitas de Sol and National Museum of Mexican Art. I was speaking with a couple of people about mezcal, and they stopped me and they said, "Is that how you pronounce it?" Right. And we've got the whole episode that's just about pronunciations. And they said, because I've always said mezcal. And this is what this woman said to me. And what I said to her was, you know what? Like, when I say tamale, it drives Chava nuts, and it's not what they say in Mexico. But in Mexico, they also don't say Mexico. They say Mexico or Mexico.
Yeah,
sorry.
Mexico. Come on.
Look at that. Yeah. They say Mexico, right? And the point that I was trying to make to her was, like, say it however it's going to communicate to the person to whom you're communicating the thing that you want. And don't be inhibited by, "I don't want to get it wrong." Hmm. And so I think maybe there's a connection here to this where, like, okay, so maybe the word maguey isn't historically Mexican. It comes from the Caribbean, but it translated. It moved over and people understood that as the thing. And so, is that wrong?
And I think, like, I'm interested in this part of language because I think it's representative and also what happened with the technologies that were traveling. I have been a little bit annoyed by a lot of people, you know, like when you're talking about internal capturation steels, yeah. What are, I guess, commonly called Filipino steels these days. Everybody just goes like, "Yeah, because the Filipinos came to Mexico and they brought the alembic." And that's like if it was an accepted fact. Like if it was, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that happened. Like, A, in those galleons that were coming to Mexico from the Philippines, that was a tremendously international cruise. Can you imagine the amount of different people that was in those ships? That was the one ticket to get to the Americas from Asia back then. So there was Chinese, there was Mongolians, there was Koreans, there was Japanese, there were Filipinos. Probably the least of them were Filipinos, you know? And then in terms of distillation, you have all the European influences in this land. You had the understanding of how to ferment grapes and do wine, how to do beer, how to distill brandies. So you had this colliding cultures getting to Mexico and sometimes expressing themselves in the way that mezcal is being made. So if that happened with language, I really think that also happened with the technologies that were here. And all I'm trying to suggest with this quote that I found is that, you know, like, please, when you're explaining internal capturation steels, don't just say that the Filipinos came here and gave us that, because that's A, not completely accepted. It's actually most possible that it's more Mongolian technology that traveled to the Philippines. And I'm going to try to get us an interview with someone that did a really detailed study on this.
Yeah.
Because it seems that the Mongolians were the first ones that were really interested in widespread use of distilled drinks, because they were traveling all around and their fermented drinks could go bad. So they needed a stable alcohol to travel around.
Oh.
And so maybe a lot of the distillation technologies that we're calling Filipinos are actually more Mongolian than Southeast, Southeastern. And I guess, like, Roy is going to be very annoyed about this episode because I don't think there's quite a conclusion to it. but I guess, like, it's, and this was like what we say in Mexico, a popurrí. Had a little bit of everything.
Yeah. It's funny, throughout this episode, this recording, I've been thinking, how the hell am I going to title this? And what's the description going to look like?
Well, you know, I'm going to try to do more of these exercises, and they're slightly exhausting because finding actual documents that the conquerors were writing to communicate what's happening in Mexico, I don't have access to originals, but I'm realizing that a lot of researchers are using this in their own articles. And it's like a more digested way in which I can find things that maybe don't make a lot of sense for what this research is trying to find, but because we have this bizarre specialty that it's agave spirits, yeah, suddenly makes sense for us. And I think conclusion number one. Yes. Pulque was for the masses.
Yeah, possibly, and you know what? It's interesting. Like I'd already forgotten that point, and I think that is a very vital point. If that really does conflict with the general narrative.
Yeah. Well, yes, and I might get crucified by this, but I believe pulque was for the masses. Point number two, mezcal is a textbook example of intense cultural appropriation.
Okay.
From the language to the technologies, is the most mischievous usage of third parties technologies and approaches to convert fermented drinks into alcohol.
I don't think I would say most, but it was certainly that.
It's a good offender. Yeah. And number three, it's like, you know, like, and I've been saying this more and more, but I think getting an ultra-nationalist approach to agave spirits is the worst thing that we can do. Because it started as an international phenomenon. You.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So it's like,
yeah, just being nationalistic about something that's international.
About something that started as a world phenomena,
yeah.
I think it's just absolutely silly. And I think that if this was the origin of agave spirits, then it should continue to be its wheel.
Okay, I like that. Can I have a conclusion?
Maybe.
Okay. My conclusion would be, it turns out that the Coca-Cola that's gray marketed up here that's so good because it's made with sugarcane is actually not part of Mexican cultural heritage, that it turns out it should be made with corn syrup because corn syrup is more cultural to Mexico. If you look back historically at Mexico, it's more historical than a sugarcane.
Love it.
Okay.
Cool.
Let's wrap it at that, Chava.
Okay, señor Lu, adiosito.
Hasta pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lu Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.